This is a special edition of the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike Malloy tonight. We're going to be following the vice presidential debate live all night long, followed by a live in-studio bloggers roundtable here in Los Angeles. Let's get right to the debate in St. Louis, Missouri, which is currently underway.
With him, his colleagues didn't want to listen to him and wouldn't go towards that reform that was needed then. I think that the alarm has been heard, though, and there will be that greater oversight, again, thanks to John McCain's bipartisan efforts that he was so instrumental in bringing folks together over this past week, even suspending his own campaign to make sure he was putting obsessive politics aside and putting the country first.
You both would like to be vice president. Senator Biden, how, as vice president, would you work to shrink this gap of polarization which has sprung up in Washington, which you both have spoken about here tonight?
Well, that's what I've done my whole career, Gwen, on very, very controversial issues, from dealing with violence against women to putting 100,000 police officers in the street to trying to get something done about the genocide and what was going on in Bosnia. And I have been able to reach across the aisle. I think it's fair to say that I have almost as many friends on the Republican side of the aisle as I do the Democratic side of the aisle. But am I able to respond to, are we able to stay on the
top? You may if you like.
Yeah, well, you know, until 2 weeks ago, it was 2 Mondays ago, John McCain said at 9 o'clock in the morning that the fundamentals of the economy were strong. 2 weeks before that, he said, George, we've made great economic progress under George Bush's policies. 9 o'clock, the economy was strong. 11 o'clock that same day, 2 Mondays ago, John McCain said that we have an economic crisis. That doesn't make John McCain a bad guy, but it does point out he's out of touch. Those folks on the sidelines knew that 2 months ago.
Governor Palin, you may respond.
John McCain, in referring to the fundamental of our economy being strong, he was talking to and he was talking about the American workforce, and the American workforce is the greatest in this world with the ingenuity and the work ethic that is just entrenched in our workforce. That's a positive, that's encouragement, and that's what John McCain meant. Now, what I've done as a governor and as a mayor is truly had that track record of reform, and I've joined this team that is a team of mavericks with John McCain, also with his track record of reform, where we're known for putting partisan politics aside to just get the job done. Now, Barack Obama, of course, he's pretty much only voted along his party lines. In fact, 96% of his votes have been solely along party line. Not having that proof for the American people to know that his commitment, too, is, you know, put the partisanship, put the special interests aside, and get down to getting business done for the people of America. We're tired of the old politics as usual, and that's why, with all due respect, I do respect your years in the U.S. Senate, but I think Americans are craving something new and different, and that new energy and that new commitment that's going to come with reform. I think that's why we need to send the maverick from the Senate and put him in the White House, and I'm happy to join him there.
Governor, Senator, neither of you really answered that last question about what you would do as vice president. I'm going to come back to that throughout the evening to try to see if we can look forward as well. Now, let's talk about this. The next question is to talk about the subprime lending meltdown. Who do you think was at fault? I start with you, Governor Palin. Was it the greedy lenders? Was it the risky homebuyers who shouldn't have been buying a home in the first place? And what should you be doing about it?
Darn right it was the predator lenders who tried to talk Americans into thinking that it was smart to buy a $300,000 house if we could only afford a $100,000 house. There was deception there, and there was greed, and there is corruption on Wall Street, and we need to stop that. Again, John McCain and I, that commitment that we have made, and we're going to follow through on that, getting rid of that corruption. One thing that Americans do at this time also, though, is let's commit ourselves, just everyday American people, Joe Sixpack, hockey moms across the nation. I think we need to band together and say, never again. Never will we be exploited and taken advantage of again by those who are managing our money and loaning us these dollars. We need to make sure that we demand from the federal government strict oversight of those entities in charge of our investments and our savings. And we need also to not get ourselves in debt. Let's do what our parents told us before we probably even got that first credit card. don't live outside of our means. We need to make sure that as individuals, we're taking personal responsibility through all this. It's not the American people's fault that the economy is hurting like it is, but we have an opportunity to learn a heck of a lot of good lessons through this and say, never again will we be taken advantage of.
Senator.
Well, Gwen, 2 years ago, Barack Obama warned about the subprime mortgage crisis. John McCain said shortly after that in December he was surprised there was a subprime mortgage problem. John McCain, while Barack Obama was warning about what we had to do, was literally giving an interview to the Wall Street Journal saying that I'm always for cutting regulations. We let Wall Street run wild. John McCain, and he's a good man, but John McCain thought that the answer is that tried and true Republican response, deregulate. So what you had is you had overwhelming, quote, deregulation. You had actually the belief that Wall Street could self-regulate itself. And while Barack Obama was talking about reinstating those regulations, John, on 20 different occasions in the previous year and a half, called for more deregulation. Matter of fact, John recently wrote an article in a major magazine saying that he wants to do for the healthcare industry, deregulate it, and let the free market move like he did for the banking industry. So deregulation was the promise. And guess what? Those people who and say don't go into debt, they can barely pay to fill up their gas tank. I was recently at my local gas station, asked a guy named Joey Danko. I said, Joey, how much it cost to fill your tank? You know what his answer was? He said, I don't know, Joe. I never have enough money to do it. The middle class needs relief, tax relief. They need it now. They need help now. The focus will change with Barack Obama.
Governor, please, if you want to respond to what he said about Senator McCain's comments about health care.
I'd like to respond about the tax increases. And, we can speak in agreement here that darn right we need tax relief for Americans so that jobs can be created here. Now, Barack Obama and Senator Biden also voted for the largest tax increases in U.S. history. Barack had 94 opportunities to side on the people's side and reduce taxes, and 94 times he voted to increase taxes or not support a tax reduction, 94 times. Now, that's not what we need to create jobs and really bolster and heat up our economy. We do need the private sector to be able to keep more of what we earn and produce. Government's going to have to learn to be more efficient and live with less if that's what it takes to rein in the government growth that we've seen today. But we do need tax relief. And Barack Obama even supported increasing taxes as late as last year for those families making only $42,000 a year. That's a lot of middle-income, average American family. To increase taxes on them, I think that is the way to kill jobs and to continue to harm our economy.
Senator.
Charge is absolutely not true. Barack Obama did not vote to raise taxes. The vote she's referring to, John McCain voted the exact same way. It was a budget procedural vote. John McCain voted the same way. It did not raise taxes. Number two, using the standard that the governor uses, John McCain voted 477 times to raise taxes. It's a bogus standard. But if you notice, Gwen, the governor did not answer the question about deregulation. Did not answer the question of defending John McCain about not going along with the deregulation, letting Wall Street run wild. He did support deregulation almost across the board. That's why we got in so much
trouble. Would you like to have an opportunity to answer that before we move on?
I'm still on the tax thing because I want to correct you on that again. And I want to let you know what I did as a mayor and as a governor. And I may not answer the questions the way that either the moderator or you want to hear, but I'm going to talk straight to the American people and let them know my track record also. As mayor, every year I was in office, I did reduce taxes. I eliminated personal property taxes and eliminated small business inventory taxes, and as governor, we suspended our state fuel tax. We did all those things knowing that that is how our economy would be heated up. Now, as for John McCain's adherence to rules and regulations and pushing for even harder and tougher regulations, that is another thing that he is known for, though. Look at the tobacco industry. Look at campaign finance reform.
Okay, our time is up here. I'm going to move on to the next question. Senator Biden, we want to talk about taxes. Let's talk about taxes.
Good.
You have proposed raising taxes on people who earn over $250,000 a year. The question for you is, why is that not health class warfare? And the same question for you, Governor Palin, is you have proposed a taxing employer health benefits, which some studies say would actually throw 5 million more people onto the rolls of the uninsured. I want to know why that isn't taking things out on the poor, starting with you, Senator Biden.
Well, Gwen, where I come from, it's called fairness, just simple fairness. The middle class is struggling. The middle class under John McCain's tax proposals, 100 million families, middle class families, households to be precise. They got not a single change. They got not a single break in taxes. No one making less than $250,000 under Barack Obama's plan will see one single penny of their tax raise, whether it's their capital gains tax, their income tax, investment tax, any tax. And 95% of the people in the United States of America making less than $150,000 will get a tax break. Now, that seems to me to be simple fairness. The economic engine of America is the middle class. It's the people listening to this broadcast. When you do well, America does well. Even the wealthy do well. This is not punitive. John wants to add $300 billion in new tax cuts per year for corporate America and the very wealthy, while giving virtually nothing to the middle class. We have a different value set. The middle class is the economic engine. It's fair. They deserve the tax breaks, not the super wealthy are doing pretty well. They don't need any more tax breaks. And by the way, they'll pay no more than they did under Ronald Reagan.
Governor?
I do take issue with some of the principle there, with that redistribution of wealth principle that seems to be espoused by you. But when you talk about Barack's plan to tax increase affecting only those making $250,000 a year or more, you're forgetting the millions of small businesses that are going to fit into that category. So they're going to be the ones paying higher taxes, thus resulting in fewer jobs being created and less productivity. Now, you said recently that higher taxes, or asking for higher taxes, or paying higher taxes, is patriotic. In the middle class of America, which is where Todd and I have been, you know, all of our lives, that's not patriotic. Patriotic is saying, government, you know, you're not always the solution. In fact, too often you're the problem. So government, lessen the tax burden on the private sector and on our families, and get out of the way and let the private sector and our families grow and thrive and prosper. An increased tax formula that Barack Obama is proposing, in addition to nearly $1 trillion in new spending that he's proposing, is the backwards way of trying to grow our economy.
This is the Mike Malloy Show. More vice presidential debate, live coverage from St. Louis, Missouri, right after this. Listening to live coverage of the vice presidential debate on the Mike Malloy Show, live roundtable after the debate.
Turns around and tells something else to another group, including his plans that will make this bailout plan, this rescue plan, even better. I want to go back to the energy plan, though, because this is an important one that Barack Obama, he voted for in 2005. Senator Biden, you would remember that in that energy plan that Obama voted for, that's what gave those oil companies those big tax breaks. Your running mate voted for that. You know what I had to do in the state of Alaska? I had to take on those oil companies and tell them, no, you know, any of the greed there that has been kind of instrumental, I guess, in their mode of operation, that wasn't going to happen in my state. And that's why Tillerson at Exxon and Mulva at ConocoPhillips, bless their hearts, they're doing what they need to do as corporate CEOs, but they're not my biggest fans, because what I had to do up there in Alaska was to break up a monopoly up there and say, you know, the people are going to come first, and we're going to make sure that we have value given to the people of Alaska with those resources, and those huge tax breaks aren't coming to the big multinational corporations anymore, not when it adversely affects the people who live in a state, and in this case, in a country, who should be benefiting at the same time. So it was Barack Obama who voted for that energy plan that gave those tax breaks to the oil companies that I then had to turn around as a governor of an energy-producing state and kind of undo in my own area of expertise, and that's energy.
So, Governor, as Vice President, there is nothing that you have promised as a candidate that you would be, that you wouldn't take off the table because of this financial crisis we're in?
There is not, and how long have I been at this? Like 5 weeks? So there hasn't been a whole lot that I've promised except to do what is right for the American people, put government back on the side of the American people, stop the greed and corruption on Wall Street, and the rescue plan has got to include that massive oversight that Americans are expecting and deserving. And I don't believe that John McCain has made any promise that he would not be able to keep either.
Senator.
Again, let's talk about the tax breaks. Barack Obama voted for an energy bill because for the first time it had real support for alternative energy. When there were separate votes on eliminating the tax breaks for the oil companies, Barack Obama voted to eliminate them. John did not. And let me just ask a rhetorical question. If John really wanted to eliminate them, why is he adding to his budget an additional $4 billion in tax cut for ExxonMobil's of the world that, in fact, already have made $600 billion since 2001? And look, I agree with the governor. She imposed a windfall profits tax up there in Alaska. That's what Barack Obama and I want to do. We want to be able to do for all of you Americans, give you back $1,000 like she's been able to give back money to her folks back there. But John McCain will not support a windfall profits tax. They've made $600 billion since 2001, and John McCain wants to give them all by itself, separate, no additional bill, all by itself, another $4 billion tax cut. If that is not proof of what I say, I'm not sure what can be. So I hope the governor is able to convince John McCain to support our windfall profits tax, which she supported in Alaska, and I give her credit for it.
Next question, Governor Palin. Still on the economy, last year Congress passed a bill that would make it more difficult for debt-strapped mortgage holders to declare bankruptcy to get out from under that debt. This is something that John McCain supported. Would you have?
Yes, I would have. But here again, there have been so many changes in the conditions of our economy in just even these past weeks that there has been more and more revelation made aware now to Americans about the corruption and the greed on Wall Street. We need to look back even 2 years ago, and we need to be appreciative of John McCain's call for reform with Fannie Mae, with Freddie Mac, with the mortgage lenders too, who were starting to really kind of rear that head of abuse, and the colleagues in the Senate weren't going to go there with them. So we have John McCain to thank for at least warning people, and we also have John McCain to thank for bringing in a bipartisan effort people to the table so that we can start putting politics aside, even putting a campaign aside, and just do what's right to fix this economic problem that we are in. It is a crisis. It's okay. A toxic mess, really, on Main Street that's affecting Wall Street.
More Malloy coverage right after this. More live coverage of the vice presidential debate in St. Louis, Missouri, here on the Mike Malloy Show special edition Bloggers Roundtable coming up afterwards.
Clear it up for us, both of you, and start with Governor Palin.
Yes, Senator McCain does support this. The chant is drill, baby, drill, and that's what we hear all across this country in our rallies because people are so hungry for those domestic sources of energy to be tapped into. They know that even in my own energy-producing state, we have billions of barrels of oil and hundreds of trillions of cubic feet of clean, green natural gas, and we're building a nearly $40 billion natural gas pipeline, which is North America's largest and most expensive infrastructure project ever to flow those sources of energy into hungry markets. Barack Obama and Senator O'Biden, you've said no to everything in trying to find a domestic solution to the energy crisis that we're in. You even called drilling safe, environmentally friendly drilling offshore as raping the outer continental shelf. There, with new technology, with tiny footprints even on land, it is safe to drill, and we need to do more of that. But also in that all-of-the-above approach that Senator McCain supports the alternative fuels will be tapped into, the nuclear, the clean coal. I was surprised to hear you mention that, because you had said that there isn't anything, such a thing as clean coal. And I think you said it in a rope line, too, at one of the rallies.
We do need to keep within our 2 minutes, but I just want to ask you, do you support capping carbon emissions?
I do.
Okay, and on the
absolutely
clean coal issue.
Absolutely, we do. We call for setting hard targets, number one.
On clean coal.
My record, just take a look at the record. My record for 25 years has supported clean coal technology. A comment made in a rope line was taken out of context. I was talking about exporting that technology to China, so when they burn their dirty coal, it won't be as dirty, it will be clean. But here's the bottom line, Gwen. How do we deal with global warming with continued addition to carbon emissions? And if the only answer you have is oil, and John and the governor says John's for everything, well, why did John vote 20 times? Maybe he's for everything as long as it is not helped forward by the government. Maybe he's for everything if the free market takes care of it. I don't know, but he voted 20 times against funding alternative energy sources.
The next round of questions starts with you, sure. Senator Biden. Do you support, as they do in Alaska, granting same-sex benefits to couples?
Absolutely. Do I support granting same-sex benefits? Absolutely, positively. Look, in an Obama-Biden administration, there will be absolutely no distinction from a constitutional standpoint or a legal standpoint between a same-sex and a heterosexual couple. The fact of the matter is that under the Constitution, we should be granted, same-sex couples should be able to have visitation rights in the hospital, joint ownership of property, life insurance policies, etc. That's only fair. It's what the Constitution calls for. And so we do support making sure that committed couples in the same-sex marriage are guaranteed the same constitutional benefits as it relates to their property rights, their rights of visitation, their rights of insurance, their rights of ownership, as heterosexual couples do.
Governor, would you support expanding that beyond Alaska to the rest of the nation?
Well, not if it goes closer and closer towards redefining the traditional definition of marriage between one man and one woman. And unfortunately, that's sometimes where those steps lead. But I also want to clarify, if there's any kind of suggestion at all from my answer, that I would be anything but tolerant of adults in America choosing their partners, choosing relationships that they deem best for themselves. You know, I am tolerant, and I have a very diverse family and group of friends, and even within that group, you would see some who may not agree with me on this issue, some very dear friends who don't agree with me on this issue. But in that tolerance also, no one would ever propose, not in a McCain-Palin administration, to do anything to prohibit, say, visitations in a hospital or contracts being signed, negotiated between parties. But I will tell Americans straight up that I don't support defining marriage as anything but between one man and one woman. And I think through nuances we could go round and round about what that actually means, but I'm being as straight up with Americans as I can in my non-support for anything but a traditional definition of marriage.
Let's try to avoid nuance, Senator. Do you support gay marriage?
No, Barack Obama nor I support redefining from a civil side what constitutes marriage. We do not support that. That is basically a decision to be able to be left to the faith and people who practice their faith, determination, what you call it. The bottom line, though, is, and I'm glad to hear the governor, I take her at her word, obviously, that she thinks there should be no civil rights distinction, none whatsoever, between a committed gay couple and a committed heterosexual couple. If that's the case, we really don't have a difference.
Is that what you said?
Your question to him was whether he supported gay marriage, and my answer is the same as his, and it is that I do not.
Wonderful. You agree. On that note, let's move to foreign policy.
Okay.
You both have sons who are in Iraq or on their way to Iraq. You, Governor Palin, have said that you would like to see a real clear plan for an exit strategy. What should that be, Governor?
I am very thankful that we do have a good plan, and the surge in the counterinsurgency strategy in Iraq that has proven to work, I am thankful that that is part of the plan implemented under a great American hero, General Petraeus, and pushed hard by another great American, Senator John McCain. I know that the other ticket opposed this surge, in fact, even opposed funding for our troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. Barack Obama voted against funding troops thereafter, promising that he would not do so. And Senator Biden, I respected you when you called him out on that. You said that his vote was political, and you said it would cost lives. And Barack Obama at first said he would not do that. He turned around under political pressure and he voted against funding the troops. We do have a plan for withdrawal. We don't need early withdrawal out of Iraq. We cannot afford to lose there, or we're going to be no better off in the war in Afghanistan either. We have got to win in Iraq. And with the surge that has worked, we're now down to pre-surge numbers in Iraq. That's where we can be. We can start putting more troops in Afghanistan as we also work with our NATO allies who are there strengthening us. And we need to grow our military. We cannot afford to lose against al-Qaeda and the Shia extremists who are still there, still fighting us. But we're getting closer and closer to victory, and it would be a travesty if we quit now in Iraq.
Senator.
Gwen, with all due respect, I didn't hear a plan. Barack Obama's offered a clear plan. Shift responsibility to the Iraqis over the next 16 months, draw down our combat troops. Ironically, the same plan that Maliki, the Prime Minister of Iraq, and George Bush are now negotiating. The only odd man out here, only one left out, is John McCain, number one. Number two, with regard to Barack Obama not, quote, funding the troops, John McCain voted the exact same way. John McCain voted against funding the troops because the amendment he voted against, had a timeline in it to draw down American troops. And John said, I'm not going to fund the troops if, in fact, there was a timeline. Barack Obama and I agree fully and completely on one thing. You've got to have a timeline to draw down the troops and shift responsibility to the Iraqis. We're spending $10 billion a month, while the Iraqis have an $80 billion surplus. Barack says it's time for them to spend their own money, have the 400,000 military we've trained for them begin to take their own responsibility, and gradually over 6 months, 16 months withdraw. John McCain, this is a fundamental difference between us. We will end this war. For John McCain, there is no end in sight to end this war. Fundamental difference. We will end this war.
Governor.
Your plan is a white flag of surrender in Iraq, and that is not what our troops need to hear today, that's for sure, and it's not what our nation needs to be able to count on. You guys oppose the surge. The surge works. Barack Obama still can't admit that the surge works. We'll know when we're finished in Iraq, when the Iraqi government can govern its people, and when the Iraqi security forces can secure its people. And our commanders on the ground will tell us when those conditions have been met. And Maliki and the Talibani also, in working with us, are knowing again that we're getting closer and closer to that point, that victory that's within sight. Now, you said regarding Senator McCain's military policies there, Senator Biden, that you supported a lot of these things. In fact, you said that you wanted to run, you'd be honored to run with him on the ticket. And that's an indication, I think, of some of the support that you had, at least until you became the VP pick here. You also said that Barack Obama was not ready to be commander-in-chief. And I know, again, that you opposed the move that he made to try to cut off funding for the troops, and I respect you for that. I don't know how you can defend that position now, but I know that you know, especially with your son in the National Guard, and I have great respect for your family also and the honor that you show our military. Barack Obama, though, another story there. Anyone, I think, who can cut off funding for the troops after promising not to, that's another story.
Senator Biden.
John McCain voted to cut off funding for the troops. Let me say that again. John McCain voted against an amendment containing $1.6 billion that I had gotten to get MRAPs, those things that are protecting the governor's son and, pray God, my son and a lot of other sons and daughters. He voted against it. He voted against it, the funding, because he said the amendment had a timeline in it to end this war, and he didn't like that. But let's get straight who has been right and wrong. John McCain and Dick Cheney said, when I was saying we would not be greeted as liberators, we would not, this war would take a decade, not a day, not a week, not 6 months, we would not be out of there quickly. John McCain was saying the Sunnis and Shias got along with each other without reading the history of the last 700 years. John McCain said there'd be enough oil to pay for this. John McCain has been dead wrong. I love him. As my mother would say, God love him, but he's been dead wrong on the fundamental issues relating to the conduct of the war. Barack Obama has been right. They're the facts.
Let's move on to Iran and Pakistan. I'm curious about what you think, starting with you, Senator Biden. Which is the greatest threat, a nuclear Iran or an unstable Pakistan? Explain why.
Well, they're both extremely, extremely dangerous. I always have focused, as you know, Gwen, I've been focusing on for a long time, along with Barack, on Pakistan. Pakistan already has nuclear weapons. Pakistan already has deployed nuclear weapons. Pakistan's weapons can already hit Israel and the Mediterranean. Iran getting a nuclear weapon would be very, very destabilizing. They are not close to getting a nuclear weapon that's able to be deployed. So they're both very dangerous. They'd both be game changers. But look, here's what the fundamental problem I have with John's policy about terror and stability. John continues to tell us that the central war on the front on terror is in Iraq. I promise you, if an attack comes in the homeland, it's going to come, as our security services said, it's going to come from Al-Qaeda planning in the hills of Afghanistan and Pakistan. That's where they live. That's where they are. That's where it will come from. And right now, that resides in Pakistan. A stable government needs to be established. We need to support that democracy by helping them not only with their military, but with their governance as well as their economic well-being. There have been 7,000 madrasas built along that border. We should be helping them build schools to compete for those hearts and minds of the people in the region so that we are actually able to take on terrorism. And by the way, that's where bin Laden lives, and we will go at him if we have actionable intelligence.
Governor.
More vice presidential debate coverage live from St. Louis here on the Mike Malloy Show right after this.
Incredible.
Governor, you mentioned Israel and your support for Israel. Yes. What has this administration done right or wrong? This is the great lingering unresolved issue, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. What have they done? And is a two-state solution the solution?
A two-state solution is the solution, and Secretary Rice, having recently met with leaders on one side or the other, they're also still in these waning days of the Bush administration trying to forge that peace, and that needs to be done, and that will be top of an agenda item also under a McCain-Palin administration. Israel is our strongest and best ally in the Middle East. We have got to assure them that we will never allow a second Holocaust, despite, again, warnings from Iran and any other country that would seek to destroy Israel, that is what they would like to see. We will support Israel. A two-state solution, building our embassy also in Jerusalem, those things that we look forward to being able to accomplish with this peace-seeking nation. And they have a track record of being able to forge these peace agreements. They succeeded with Jordan. They succeeded with Egypt. I'm sure that we're going to see more success there also. It's got to be a commitment of the United States of America, though. And I can promise you, in a McCain-Palin administration, that commitment is there to work with our friends in Israel.
Senator.
Gwen, no one in the United States Senate has been a better friend to Israel than Joe Biden. I would have never, ever joined this ticket were I not absolutely sure Barack Obama shared my passion. But you asked the question about whether or not this administration's policy had made sense or something to that effect. It has been an abject failure, this administration's policy. In fairness to Secretary Rice, she's trying to turn it around now in the seventh or eighth year. Here's what the president said when we said no. He insisted on elections on the West Bank when I said and others said and Barack Obama said, big mistake. Hamas will win. You legitimize them. What happened? Hamas won. When we kicked, along with France, we kicked Hezbollah out of Lebanon, I said and Barack said, move NATO forces in there, fill the vacuum, because if you don't, Hezbollah will control it. Now what's happened? Hezbollah is a legitimate part of the government in the country immediately to the north of Israel. The fact of the matter is the policy of this administration has been an abject failure. And speaking of freedom being in the march, the only thing on the march is Iran. It's closer to a bomb. Its proxies now have a major stake in Lebanon as well as in the Gaza Strip with Hamas. We will change this policy with thoughtful, real live diplomacy that understands that you must back Israel in letting them negotiate, support their negotiation, and stand with them, not insist on policies like this administration has.
Has this administration's policy been an abject failure, as the senator says, Governor?
No, I do not believe that it has been, but I'm so encouraged to know that we both love Israel, and I think that is a good thing to get to agree on, Senator Biden. I respect your position on that. No, in fact, when we talk about the Bush administration, there's a time, too, when Americans are going to say, enough is enough with your ticket, on constantly looking backwards and pointing fingers and doing the blame game. There have been huge blunders in the war. There have been huge blunders throughout this administration, as there are with every administration, but for a ticket that wants to talk about change and looking into the future, there's just too much finger pointing backwards to ever make us believe that that's where you're going. Positive change is coming, though. Reform of government is coming. We'll learn from the past mistakes in this administration and other administrations, and we're going to forge ahead with putting government back on the side of the people and making sure that our country comes first, putting obsessive partisanship aside. That's what John McCain has been known for in all these years. He has been the Maverick. He has ruffled feathers, but I know, Senator Biden, you have respected him for that, and I respect you for acknowledging that. But change is coming.
Just looking backwards, Senator?
Look, past his prologue, Gwen. The issue is, how different is John McCain's policy going to be than George Bush's? I haven't heard anything yet. I haven't heard how his policy is going to be different on Iran than George Bush's. I haven't heard how his policy is going to be different with Israel than George Bush's. I haven't heard how his policy in Afghanistan is going to be different than George Bush's. I haven't heard how his policy in Pakistan is going to be different than George Bush's. It may be, but so far, it is the same as George Bush's. And you know where that policy has taken us. We will make significant change so once again we're the most respected nation in the world. That's what we're going to do.
Governor, on another issue, interventionism, nuclear weapons. What should be the trigger, or should there be a trigger, when nuclear weapons use is ever put into play?
Nuclear weaponry, of course, would be the be-all, end-all of just too many people and too many parts of our planet, so those dangerous regimes, again, cannot be allowed to acquire nuclear weapons, period. Our nuclear weaponry here in the U.S. is used as a deterrent, and that's a safe, stable way to use nuclear weaponry. But for those countries, North Korea also under Kim Jong-il, we have got to make sure that we're putting the economic sanctions on these countries and that we have friends and allies supporting us in this to make sure that leaders like Kim Jong-il and Ahmadinejad are not allowed to acquire, to proliferate, or to use those nuclear weapons. It is that important. Can we talk about Afghanistan real quick also, though?
Certainly.
Okay, I'd like to just really quickly mention there, too, that when you look back and you say that the Bush administration's policy on Afghanistan perhaps would be the same as McCain, and that's not accurate. The surge principles, not the exact strategy, but the surge principles that have worked in Iraq need to be implemented in Afghanistan also, and that perhaps would be a
more vice presidential debate coverage live on Malloy right after this. This is Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy, live from Los Angeles. We're covering the vice presidential debate here. And at the bottom of the hour, when the debate ends, we will be back with a live in-studio bloggers roundtable with some world-class bloggers. So stick around for that.
I beg to disagree with you again here on whether you supported Barack Obama or John McCain's strategies. Here again, you can say what you want to say a month out before people are asked to vote on this, but we listen to the debates. I think tomorrow morning, you know, the pundits are going to start doing the who said what at what time, and we'll have proof of some of this. But again, John McCain, who knows how to win a war, who's been there, and he's faced challenges, and he knows what evil is, and he knows what it takes to overcome the challenges here with our military. He knows to learn from the mistakes, from the blunders that we have seen in the war in Iraq especially. He will know how to implement the strategies, working with our commanders, though, and listening to what they have to say, taking the politics out of these war issues. He'll know how to win a war.
Thank you, Governor. Probably the biggest cliche about the vice presidency is that it's a heartbeat away. Everybody's waiting to see what would happen if the worst happened. How would you disagree on some things from your principles? You disagree on Alaska, drilling in Alaska, the National Wildlife Refuge. You disagree on surveillance law, at least you have in the past. How would a Biden administration be different from an Obama administration if that were to happen?
Well, God forbid that it would ever happen. It would be a national tragedy of historic proportions if it were to happen. But if it did, I would carry out Barack Obama's policies, his policies of reinstating the middle class, making sure that they get a fair break, making sure that they have access to affordable health insurance, making sure they get serious tax breaks, making sure that we can help their children to get to college, making sure we have an energy policy that leads us in the direction of not only toward independence and a cleaner environment, but an energy policy that creates 5 million new jobs, a foreign policy that ends this war in Iraq, a foreign policy that goes after the one mission the American public gave the president after 9/11, to get and capture or kill bin Laden and to eliminate al-Qaeda. A policy that would in fact engage our allies in making sure that we knew we were acting on the same page and not dictating. And a policy that would reject the Bush doctrine of preemption and regime change and replace it with a doctrine of prevention and cooperation. And ladies and gentlemen, this is the biggest ticket item that we have in this election. This most important election you will ever, ever have voted in, any of you, since 1932. And where such stark differences, I would follow through on Barack's policies because, in essence, I agree with every major initiative he is suggesting.
Governor.
And heaven forbid, yes, that that would ever happen, no matter how this ends up, that that would ever happen with either party. As for disagreeing with John McCain and how our administration would work, what do you expect? A team of mavericks. Of course, we're not going to agree 100% on everything. And as we discuss Anwar there, at least we can agree to disagree on that one. And I'm going to keep pushing him on Anwar, though. I have so appreciated that he has never asked me to check my opinions at the door. And he wants deliberative debate and healthy debate so that we can make good policy. What I would do also, if that were to ever happen, though, is to continue the good work that he is so committed to, and that's putting government back on the side of the people and get rid of the greed and the corruption on Wall Street and in Washington. I think we need a little bit of reality from Wasilla Main Street there brought to Washington, D.C., so that people there can understand how the average working class family is viewing bureaucracy and the federal government and Congress and the inaction of Congress. Just everyday working class Americans saying, you know, government, just get out of my way if you're going to do any harm and mandate more things on me and take more of my money and income tax and business taxes. You're going to have a choice in just a few weeks here on either supporting the ticket that wants to create jobs and bolster our economy and win the war, or you're going to be supporting a ticket that wants to increase taxes, which ultimately kills jobs and is going to hurt our economy.
Can I respond? Look,
please.
All you got to do is go down Union Street with me in Wilmington and go to Katie's restaurant or walk into Home Depot with me where I spend a lot of time. And you ask anybody in there whether or not the economic and foreign policy this administration has made them better off in the last 8 years. And then ask them whether there's a single major initiative that John McCain differs with the president on taxes, on Iraq, on Afghanistan, on the whole question of how to help education, on the dealing with health care. Look. The people in my neighborhood, they get it. They get it. And they know they've been getting the short end of the stick. So walk with me in my neighborhood. Go back to my old neighborhood in Claymont, an old steel town, or go up to Scranton with me. These people know the middle class has gotten the short end. The wealthy have done very well. Corporate America has been rewarded some time. We change it. Barack Obama will change it.
Governor.
Say it ain't so, Joe. There you'll go again, pointing backwards again, though. You prefaced your whole comment with the Bush administration. Now, doggone it, let's look ahead and tell Americans what we have to plan to do for them in the future. You mentioned education, and I'm glad that you did. I know that education you are passionate about, and with your wife being a teacher for 30 years, and God bless her, her reward is in heaven, right? I say, too, with education, America needs to be putting a lot more focus on that, and our schools have got to be really ramped up in terms of the funding that they are deserving. Teachers needed to be paid more. I come from a house full of school teachers. My grandma was. My dad, who's in the audience today, he's a school teacher, had been for many years. My brother, who I think is the best school teacher in the year, and there's a shout out to all those third graders at Gladyswood Elementary School. You get extra credit for watching this debate. Education in America has been, in some sense, in some of our states, just accepted to be a little bit lax. And we have got to increase the standards. No Child Left Behind was implemented. It's not doing the job, though. We need flexibility in No Child Left Behind. We need to put more of an emphasis on the profession of teaching. We need to make sure that education in either one of our agendas, I think, absolute top of the line. My kids, as public school participants right now, it's near and dear to my heart. I'm very, very concerned about where we're going in education, and we've got to ramp it up and put more attention in that arena.
Everybody gets extra credit tonight. We're going to move on to the next question. Governor, you said in July that you would have to, someone have got to explain to you exactly what it is the vice president does every day. You, Senator, said you would not be vice president under any circumstances. Now, maybe this was just what was going on at the time. But tell us now, looking forward, what it is that you think the vice presidency is worth now.
Okay, in my comment there, it was a lame attempt at a joke, and yours was a lame attempt at a joke, too, I guess, because nobody got it. Of course we know what a vice president does.
They didn't get yours or mine. Which one didn't they get?
No. No, of course. We know what a vice president does, and that's not only preside over the Senate, and we'll take that position very seriously also. I'm thankful that the Constitution would allow a bit more authority given to the vice president also, if that vice president so chose to exert it in working with the Senate. And making sure that we are supportive of the president's policies, and making sure, too, that our president understands what our strengths are. John McCain and I have had good conversations about where I would lead with his agenda, and that is energy independence in America and reform of government overall, and then working with families of children with special needs. That's near and dear to my heart also. And in those arenas, John McCain has already tapped me and said, that's where I want you. I want you to lead. And I said, I can't wait to get there and go to work with you.
Senator.
Gwen, I hope we'll get back to education, because I don't know any government program that John is supporting, not early education, more money for it. The reason No Child Left Behind was left behind was the money was left behind. We didn't fund it. But we can get back to that, I assume. With regard to the role of the vice president, I had a long talk, as I'm sure the governor did, with her principal, in my case with Barack. And let me tell you what Barack asked me to do. I have a history of getting things done in the United States Senate. John McCain would acknowledge that. My record shows that on controversial issues. I would be the point person for the legislative initiatives in the United States Congress for our administration. I would also, when asked if I wanted a portfolio, my response was no. But Barack Obama indicated to me he wanted me with him to help him govern. So every major decision he'll be making, I'll be sitting in the room to give him my best advice. He's president, not me. I'll give my best advice. And one of the things he said early on when he was choosing, he said he'd pick someone who had an independent judgment and wouldn't be afraid to tell him if he disagreed. That is sort of my reputation, as you know. So I look forward to working with Barack and playing a very constructive role in his presidency, bringing about the kind of change this country needs.
Governor.
More live coverage of the vice presidential debate in St. Louis, Missouri on this special edition of the Mike Malloy Show. Blogger Roundtable coming up. Back to the Mike Malloy Show's live coverage of the vice presidential debate in St. Louis, Missouri.
Look, I understand what it's like to be a single parent. When my wife and daughter died and my two sons were gravely injured, I understand what it's like as a parent to wonder what it's like if your kid's going to make it. I understand what it's like to sit around the kitchen table with a father who says, I got to leave, champ, because there's no jobs here. I got to head down to Wilmington, and when we get enough money, honey, we'll bring you down. I understand what it's like. I'm much better off than almost all Americans now. I get a good salary as United States Senate. I live in a beautiful house. It's my total investment that I have. So I am much better off now. But the notion that somehow, because I'm a man, I don't know what it's like to raise two kids alone. I don't know what it's like to have a child you're not sure is going to make it. I understand, as well as, with all due respect, the governor or anybody else, what it's like for those people sitting around that kitchen table. And guess what? They're looking for help. They're looking for help. They're not looking for more of the same.
Governor.
People aren't looking for more of the same. They are looking for change. And John McCain has been the consummate maverick in the Senate over all these years. He's taken shots left and right from the other party and from within his own party because he's had to take on his own party when the time was right, when he recognized it was time to put partisanship aside and just do what was right for the American people. That's what I've done as governor also, take on my own party when I had to and work with both sides of the aisle in my cabinet, appointing those who would serve regardless of party, Democrats, independents, Republicans, whatever it took to get the job done. Also, John McCain's maverick position that he's in, that's really prompted up to and indicated by the supporters that he has. Look at Lieberman and Giuliani and Romney and Lingle and all of us who come from such a diverse background of policy and of partisanship, all coming together at this time, recognizing he is the man that we need to lead in these next 4 years, because these are tumultuous times. We have got to win the wars. We have got to get our economy back on track. We have got to not allow the greed and corruption on Wall Street anymore. And we have not got to allow the partisanship that has really been entrenched in Washington, D.C., no matter who's been in charge. When the Republicans were in charge, I didn't see a whole lot of progress there either. When the Democrats either, though, this last go-around for the last 2 years. Change is coming, and John McCain is the leader of that reform.
Senator. I'll be very brief. Can I respond to that? Look, please. The maverick, let's talk about the maverick John McCain is. And again, I love him. He's been a maverick on some issues, but he has been no maverick on the things that matter to people's lives. He voted 4 out of 5 times for George Bush's budget, which put us $500 billion in debt this year and over $3 trillion in debt since he's got there. He has not been a maverick in providing health care for people. He has voted against. He voted against including another 3.6 million children in coverage that of the existing health care plan when he voted in the United States Senate. He's not been a maverick when it comes to education. He has not supported tax cuts and significant changes for people being able to send their kids to college. He's not been a maverick on the war. He's not been a maverick on virtually anything that generally affects the things that people really talk about around their kitchen table. Can we get mom's MRI? Can we send Mary back to school next semester? We can't make it. How are we going to heat the house this winter? He voted against even providing for what they call LIHEAP, for assistance to people with oil prices going through the roof in the winter. So maverick he is not on the important critical issues that affect people at that kitchen table.
Final question tonight before your closing statement, starting with you, Senator Biden. Can you think of a single issue, and this is to cast light for people who are just trying to get to know you in your final debate, your only debate of this year, can you think of a single issue, policy issue, in which you were forced to change a long-held view in order to accommodate changed circumstances?
Yeah, I can. When I got to the United States Senate and went on the Judiciary Committee as a young lawyer, I was of the view and had been trained of the view that the only thing that mattered was whether or not a nominee appointed, suggested by the president, had a judicial temperament, had not committed a crime of moral turpitude, and had been a good student. And it didn't take me long. It was hard to change, but it didn't take me long. But it took about 5 years for me to realize that the ideology of that judge makes a big difference. That's why I led the fight against Judge Bork. Had he been in the court, I suspect there would be a lot of changes that I don't like and the American people wouldn't like, including everything from Roe v. Wade to issues relating to civil rights and civil liberties. And so that was one of the intellectual changes that took place in my career as I got a close look at it. And that's why I was the first chairman of the Judiciary Committee to forthrightly rightly state that it matters what your judicial philosophy is. The American people have a right to understand it and to know it. But I did change on that, and I'm glad I did.
Governor.
There have been times where, as mayor and governor, we have passed budgets that I did not veto, and that I think could be considered as something that I quasi-caved in, if you will, but knowing that it was the right thing to do in order to progress the agenda for that year and to work with the legislative body, that body that actually holds the purse strings. So there were times when I wanted to zero-base budget and to cut taxes even more, and I didn't have enough support in order to accomplish that. But on the major principal things, no. There hasn't been something that I've had to compromise on, because we've always seemed to find a way to work together. Up there in Alaska, what we have done is, with bipartisan efforts, is work together, and again, not caring who gets the credit for what as we accomplish things up there. And that's been just a part of the operation that I've wanted to participate in, and that's what we're going to do in Washington, D.C. also. Bringing both sides together, John McCain is known for doing that also, in order to get the work done for the American people.
Let's come full circle. You both want to bring both sides together. You both talk about bipartisanship. Once again, we saw what happened this week in Washington. How do you change the tone as vice president, as number two?
Well, again, I believe John McCain were he here, this is a dangerous thing to say in the middle of an election, but he would acknowledge what I'm about to say. I have been able to work across the aisle on some of those controversial issues and change my party's mind as well as Republicans, because I learned a lesson from Mike Mansfield. Mike Mansfield, the former leader of the Senate, said to me one day, I made a criticism of Jesse Helms. He said, what would you do if I told you Jesse Helms and Dodd Helms had adopted a child who had braces?
Live debate coverage, bloggers roundtable, full analysis here on the Mike Malloy Show right after. Welcome to this special edition of the Mike Malloy Show. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly citizen investigative journalist blogger, recruited into duty here on the Mike Malloy Show. Happy to sit in on this special edition of the Mike Malloy Show, where we've just finished watching the vice presidential debate. And for those who may have missed the closing statements, we're going to have those in a little bit later in this hour. We've got sitting in with us a live bloggers roundtable here from Los Angeles. David Dayan from otherwise known as D-Day. Over at Calitix and Hullabaloo, Digby's Hullabaloo, and also dday.blogspot.com, right?
That's correct.
You blog everywhere.
Thanks.
Mark Danziger is also joining us, better known as Armed Liberal. He blogs over at windsofchange.net. Later on, we may find out what is liberal about him. Not sure. Patrick Fry from Patterico.com. Did I get that right?
Yes, you did.
Is your server back up?
No, it's not.
Okay. He's our token, should we call you a right-winger? Is that all right?
Yeah,
is
that's
that a
fine.
Slight?
No, it's not. I'm proud of it.
All right, good. We'll keep the slights for later. And joining us also by phone, Marcy Wheeler, Empty Wheel, emptywheel.firedoglake.com. Oh, Marcy, are you there with us?
I am from Michigan. Good to see you, Brad, or talk to you, whatever I'm doing.
Good to talk to you, too, from the, as you put it, the no longer swinging state of Michigan. Is that right?
Woo-hoo! That's good news for us in Michigan. Bye-bye.
See you later. Have you been able to confirm, by the way, we've been hearing reports all day that John McCain is pulling out, as it were, of, I don't know if that means he's waving the white flag, by Sarah Palin's estimation tonight.
Based on conditions on the ground.
Is that right? Okay. Well, they have told him that he's got to get out, I guess. He's pulling out of Michigan. I saw that only on, I think it was MSNBC today. Have you been able to confirm that elsewhere, Marcy Wheeler?
Saul Anousis, who's the chair of the Michigan Republican Party, did say that they're pulling out, and he said something to the effect of, yeah, we kind of knew this was going to happen, so we have 3 volunteer centers set up throughout the state to replace all of these offices that McCain is closing. Now, a lot of the staffers are going to stay in Michigan. I suspect what McCain is doing is he's going to start hitting race really hard. by another name.
Hitting.
So this is when it gets nasty, because he'll pull out and then the RNC is going to start, you know, it'll be nothing but Kwame Kilpatrick and Reverend Wright and all that.
So you did say hitting race. I wasn't sure if I understood that. All right. Well, we'll come back around to that. I want to get some first impressions, sort of go around the table. Pamela Levy was supposed to be here with us. She had some issues that she suddenly came up. She's from the DemocraticDaily.com. Whether she'll get here or not, we're not sure, but we've got at least the four or five of us here, and we will try to fit in your calls. We're going to be talking for the rest of this hour and the rest of next hour about the vice presidential debate, where I'm happy to report, in case you didn't see it, Sarah Palin did not come in and pass out and turn into a puddle on the floor. So you can give us a call, if you like, at 800-989-1480. That's 800-989-1480. We'll try to get to your calls a little bit later. So let's go on around the table. And since we do have what I just called a token right-winger here, and you're clearly outnumbered, Patrico, so I appreciate your slugging it out. Let's give you the first crack. How did it go? What were your first impressions?
I thought that Palin did pretty well, but I thought that she missed some major opportunities. And it's the same kind of thing that I've seen in some of the interviews. She has a chance to hit back hard and passes up on it. And right at the beginning of the debate, I noted that you had Biden bringing up the supposed quote from McCain about the fundamentals of the economy being strong, which he did say, but he put that in the context of clearly showing a recognition that there had been a real problem over that weekend. He said that there had been tremendous turmoil in our financial markets and Wall Street. The people were frightened by those events.
Yeah.
These are very difficult times.
Yeah.
These are all things that he said.
Well, he said it a few times, though, that the fundamentals of our economy is strong. And it was later on that he came back and he said, oh, I was talking about the workers. You bought that?
Everything that I just said to you is that he said that in his first statement. So
right.
His first statement, he made it very clear that he understood there was a problem, and Biden was basically lying about that by saying, well, it shows he's out of touch. It basically suggesting that that McCain had no idea what had gone on that weekend, and he clearly did. And Palin had a chance to put that right, and she didn't. And she kept backing off that. Another thing that really offended me was Biden tried to make Obama sound like the Mr. Regulation, and said that John McCain has always been against regulation.
Yeah.
And Palin could have hit him back with the fact that John McCain had said in 2005 that he was very concerned about the regulatory structure that governs Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And he
was
pushing.
She did bring that up a couple of times, did she not? He had warned about that?
She said in very general terms, but she did not hit him back and say, look, your guy did nothing.
Okay.
My guy in 2005 was pushing for a law and screaming about this, and he's a generally he generally favors deregulation in a lot of areas, but on this specific issue that we're talking about, he favored regulation. He was trying to do something while your guy was taking money from Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae.
Oh, that's nonsense.
No, Marcy Wheeler has an objection. Well, let's move on over to her, and we'll come around to some of these issues. I want to try to get general impressions, but let's start with Marcy Wheeler, and that's nonsense. Marcy?
Well, I mean, we can talk about Rick Davis being on the payroll of Fannie and Freddie until, a month ago. You can't run a campaign when somebody's still being paid by Fannie and Freddie and say that you're not working with them still. Look, you know, Obama has introduced something like 100 bills this year that go through banking committee. McCain, when he's barely been at the Senate, yesterday was his first vote since April, has had far, far fewer, even far fewer in the last couple of years since Obama's been there at the same time. So to say that Obama hasn't been pushing for change when he was raising these issues as soon as he got into the Senate is nonsense. That said, I think they both did really well. I thought that Governor Palin would do well. She did. I think Biden did much better than people expected of him. He had no gaffes. He had no blowhard moments. And I think that's a win for Biden. I think one of the most interesting things for me about the debate is Sarah Palin always wins debates on these kind of heartstring moments, you know, like in Alaska when she was saying, oh, yeah, we'll take care of the old people without answering the policy questions. The person who had the heartstring moment that won in this debate was Joe Biden saying, look, I know what it's like to be a single parent.
Yeah, and
I found that interesting.
he really choked up at that point. Well, let me ask you this, Marcy, and well, we're going to get to everyone else here on your general thoughts, but did Sarah Palin win by not losing in that sense? Because the expectation game had been, the expectations were so low for her after this past week. Is that going to be seen as a win?
I think that the terms of the debate are far different from what every pundit said they were going to be going in.
How so?
Because everybody expected Sarah. I saw those debates in Alaska. She did superbly well, so I didn't expect her to fall down. But after the Katie Couric, after the Gibson, everyone expected her to fall flat, you know. I knew she wasn't going to do that. I was a lot more worried about Biden having a blowhard moment or Biden having a gaffe. Mm. He didn't do that. What the debate was fundamentally about was policy. Biden knew his policy. Sarah Palin represented the McCain-Palin team, I thought, reasonably well. Mm-hmm. When it came down to it, she kept trying to say, don't talk about the past, don't talk about the past, don't talk about the past. And he kept saying, well, can you tell me how you're going to be any different from the past? And she failed to do that. So I think on the policy issue, it's not going to change the tenure of the race at this point. I don't think it's a dramatic change in any case, but I'm happy from the standpoint that we got policy issues out there, and that although Palin, I think, did well at representing their policy issues, I don't think their policies win, and that's what the American people are saying in increasing numbers, and I think that's what we saw in the debate tonight.
David Dayan from Calitix and Hullabaloo, your general thoughts on tonight.
Yeah, I have a similar take, I guess, to Marcy. I thought going in that because of the structure of the debate, the fact that there wasn't going to be a lot of crosstalk, the fact that you can control your answer much easier when it's a compressed amount of time and you really kind of know what the questions are going to be in advance, that Palin would do well, and she did. She was very folksy, appealing, engaging. Used humor on a few occasions, and she was pretty much as I expected her to be. Now, obviously, with this series of moments with the Couric interviews, where you thought this wasn't really even a vice president, but some Sacha Baron Cohen role that she was playing, that probably didn't come through that it was going to be that way for her. So, I would say she stopped the bleeding, got a bump probably from her approval ratings. I thought Biden had several pretty good moments. He articulated better than I've ever seen in this debate the fundamentals of John McCain's health care plan, the fact that he would, his idea is throwing people onto the individual market. Raising those taxes to raise revenue for this, $5,000 tax credit for individuals in a way to get people off of employer-based health care, because his idea is basically that people have too much health insurance, and if they had to pay for it, they would cut back. So, that's generally his idea. I thought Biden articulated that better than anybody.
All right, hold that point. We'll hit some of these more specific issues. Just want to sort of get general impressions. Mark Danziger.
I'm going to kind of be a maverick and say...
Are you going to be a maverick?
Yeah, I'm going to be a maverick. I think I really thought...
We're a team of mavericks.
Well,
by the way, I just want to say that...
I'm the only maverick.
Oh, you're the only
maverick?
Oh, okay. She said we're a team of mavericks.
I know, but it doesn't work
that
way.
I thought she was talking about me, Mark.
No, she wasn't. She wasn't. No love.
But she is a maverick, right?
Well, she's one of the mavericks.
Okay.
So I thought she did terribly.
Really?
Yeah, and I think that she, the fears, of course, that she is embarrassing, right, as she was in Couric, or that she's is mortifying in certain ways. But I think that what she did tonight was she failed to do the two things she had to do to sort of put herself back into contention. And the first one is to express a clear vision of what her and McCain's campaign is about that is different than the vision that actually Biden kind of expressed relatively well. And I think the second thing she had to do was demonstrate a level of policy knowledge and more than that of understanding her role as an executive in the context of policy that she didn't really pull off.
Really?
And I think that people are going to give her a bump because she didn't go on stage and act like a fourth grader.
Right. So doesn't that count?
No, I don't think so.
It's not going to hold. It's similar to the convention when she got that bump because she came out, she made a good impression.
That was a great speech. That was an honestly great speech. And if she'd been able to sustain the level of kind of articulate vision and aggression that she showed in that speech over the last 3 weeks, we'd be looking at a different election.
All right, well, we got some different viewpoints. We're going to mix it up a little bit here, be not quite so polite when we come back from from the break. Brad Friedman sitting in for Mike Malloy. We'll be speaking with the bloggers all night long. The hell with Wolf Blitzer, Chris Matthews. We don't need those professional spinners. We got our own. And these are bloggers, so they're always right. Brad Friedman sitting in for Malloy. Stick with us. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Malloy, who is, he's out goofing off, and he deserves it. Here for a live bloggers roundtable from Los Angeles with a whole bunch of bloggers. David Dayan, Mark Danziger, and Patrick Fry are here in the studio with me. Marcy Wheeler is out there in Michigan, swingless, swing stateless. We got to figure out a word for that. Getting our impressions about the vice presidential debate, David Dayan, you tell me that, Frank Luntz is saying that the focus group gives it to Palin, huh?
Yeah, apparently that's what he has said, that she knew her stuff. And that, you know, I think she would have done a little better if it was a 30-minute debate and not a 90-minute debate, because the buzzwords kept coming back, the team of mavericks, going to put government on the side of the people, we're going to clean up Wall Street and the greed and corruption on Wall Street. I mean, there were a lot of very practice lines that went over and over and over that she did. She delivered them very well, just like she delivered them very well on the night of her speech at the Republican National Convention. I don't know. From my standpoint, it started to be a little bit of overkill.
And as you guys feel like you want to agree, disagree with any of this, including Marcy out there, feel free to jump in. I got the sense that she didn't miss an opportunity as far as she did not come across the way she did in the Katie Couric interviews. And
certainly.
That's what that's what America was looking for. And I think when Luntz's group and these other people say that she won, I think she won because she didn't lose. Now, whether that's going to change the race, I don't know. An important opportunity. I agree with Patrick Fry, who supports. Do you support John McCain?
I do. I'm not thrilled, but I support him because I'd hate to see Obama and Biden get in. But I got to say, I do think that she missed a ton of opportunities. I mean, for example...
Let's hear them.
Well, okay.
I want you to tick off the Mike Malloy folks. Where did Palin go wrong?
All right, well, Gwen Ifill asks, who is at fault in this whole mortgage crisis? This is the biggest issue facing the country. They lead with it.
Right.
It is her opportunity to put a positive spin on it, and she has the chance to say, for example, that Barney Frank was saying back when John McCain was indeed trying to regulate Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, that Barney Frank said these two entities, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, I could almost do my Barney Frank impression if you like.
Do it, please.
Are not facing any kind of financial crisis. So the more people exaggerate these problems, the more pressure there is on these companies, the less we will see in terms of affordable housing. Okay, that wasn't that great an impression.
That wasn't bad.
But that's what he said back at the time that John McCain was saying that if Congress does not act, American taxpayers will continue to be exposed to the enormous risk that Fannie and Freddie pose.
You know,
but
Patrick,
wait,
I got
to
okay,
go ahead,
okay.
Marcy.
I'm all like a piece of Marcy.
But those are quotes.
But the problem does not stem from Fannie and Freddie. That's nonsense. The problem stems from people like Washington Mutual and all of those other mortgage companies that were selling liar loans. That's not what Fannie and Freddie were in the business of doing. You can say, oh, golly, they did notice that Fannie and Freddie, Fannie and Freddie is completely a bipartisan problem, but that's clearly not the root of this problem. The root of this problem is a lot of financial crap that went on in Wall Street, all of which was done because people like Don McCain got rid of regulation.
I got a 92-page PowerPoint on my site that I put up today from the Milliken Institute, who gave a lecture this morning that I was at with a couple of economists talking about the root of the problem. Yeah. And in fact, Freddie Mac and its insane sort of internal leveraging and the fact that people were taking Freddie Mac securities and treating them as though they were cash and re-leveraging them multiple times is one of the key roots of the problem.
Do Fannie and Freddie securitize and guarantee subprime loans?
No,
they don't. They are not. They had a capitalization problem, but they did not have a problem where they were damaged by the entire crisis of home prices falling and
sure
the bubble bursting, just like any other company out of there. To put responsibility on them is really
but here's the trick, and we got to get to a break here momentarily. Yeah. So I'll jump in, and we'll play their closing statements when we get back, because I had some thoughts there. We'll also want to take your calls, 800-989-1480. These details that you guys are talking about, I don't think America really cares.
That's kind of true.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately indeed, and that's the problem. You know, getting through that, let's quote George Bush, catapulting the propaganda. That's what these guys are doing. It's the big picture stuff, not the little picture stuff, not the details. It's may the best liar win. Brad Friedman sitting in for Mike Malloy. Got another big hour ahead with the bloggers live from Los Angeles and Marcy Wheeler up there in Michigan, hanging on by a thread. Stick with us. We want to talk to you, hear your thoughts, much more straight ahead. Brad. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show, a special edition. I'm Brad Friedman sitting in for Mike. Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com having a special roundtable, bloggers roundtable here live in Los Angeles with David Dayan of Calitix and Hullabaloo. Marcy Wheeler out there in Michigan from Empty Wheel. Mark Danziger also here in the studio with us. He's otherwise known as Armed Liberal from WindsOfChange.net and our token right-winger. You said you weren't offended by that. Can I call you? How about Wingnut? Can I call you that? Would that offend you?
You know, you can say whatever you like.
All right.
But then he gets to call you Moonbat. So
well,
he can do whatever he wants.
All right. And we're taking your calls at 800-989-1480. That's 800-989-1480. And over in the BradBlog.com open thread chat room, we'd love to see you over there. Agent 99 is keeping an eye on things. Silly Git writes in, every time she opens her mouth, she's talking about Palin here, not Agent 99. Every time she opens her mouth, it's a nonstop stream of neocon talking points. I have talking point indigestion. James Garner was a maverick. John McCain is an elderly crooked senator. Well, anybody have any disagreements around here?
I think I should go and she could get her.
She's good, right?
Or him.
And I want to play these closing statements here because we didn't get to pick them up. We were in a commercial break, and I think this was a real missed opportunity. I don't know if it matters or not, frankly. Because of the fact that Sarah Palin showed up, her head didn't fall off, she didn't collapse into a pool of Jell-O, it may not matter. But I think that she missed an opportunity in her closing statement, and Joe Biden, who got in the last word, I was pretty moved by that. Let's play a Sarah Palin clip, her closing statement here. It's about 90 seconds.
Well, again, Gwen, I do want to thank you and the commission. This is such an honor for me, and I appreciate, too, Senator Biden, getting to meet you finally also and getting to debate with you, and I would like more opportunity for this. I like being able to answer these tough questions without the filter even of the mainstream media, kind of telling viewers what they've just heard. Yeah. I'd rather be able to just speak to the American people like we just did, and it's so important that the American people know of the choices that they have on November 4th. Okay. I want to assure you that John McCain and I, we're going to fight for America. We're going to fight for the middle class, average, everyday American family like mine. I've been there. I know what the hurts are. I know what the challenges are. And thank God I know what the joys are, too, of living in America. We are so blessed. And I've always been proud to be an American. And so has John McCain. We have to fight for our freedoms also. Economic and our national security freedoms. It was Ronald Reagan who said that freedom is always just one generation away from extinction. We don't pass it to our children in the bloodstream. We have to fight for it and protect it and then hand it to them so that they shall do the same, or we're going to find ourselves spending our sunset years telling our children and our children's children about a time in America back in the day when men and women were free. We will fight for it, and there is only one man in this race who has really ever fought for you, and that's Senator John McCain.
Okay, so I think I may have heard almost word for word there, I'm proud to be an American because at least I know I'm free. Didn't she almost break into song there?
Greenwood was doing the debate prep, I think.
I thought so. Any impressions on that, Mark Danziger?
You know, that's a big part of the vision she ought to be somehow articulately selling, that whole city on a hill vision that Reagan, you know, actually
did.
Oh, and
she was doing the Reagan thing,
but, you know, but
she
but you,
was hitting that.
But she's saying the words, but Reagan actually somehow managed to make it into kind of a speech and a vision. She never manages, I think, to pull that off.
She did, speaking of Reagan, she knocked it out of the park when it came to alluding to previous debates. At one point when she pulled out what seemed to be her only, like, attempted zinger, when, and I think I've got the quote almost exactly here, "Say it ain't so, Joe. There you go again, going backwards again." So, by my count, I think there's about three different allusions to three different debates. Going backwards, that's the voted for it before you're against it.
Right.
There you go again, Ronald Reagan. And I think it fell kind of flat. I want to play Biden's speech unless Marcy or anybody else have a thought on her closing thoughts there.
No, but I agree with you that line, which was just kind of a pastiche of all of these famous Republican retorts, came off as just that, just a copycat. You know, it was a talking point. And, yes, it was refreshing compared to the rest of her repeated talking points, but it was so contrived and so put on that I think that was one of her less successful talking point moments, really.
Let me get to a quick call here before we go to Biden, because Harvey is calling in from St. Louis. I happen to know Harvey. I'm actually from St. Louis, Missouri. This is Harvey, I believe, my father, who's actually at Washington University at the debate site tonight. So I want to get his impressions. Oh, Dad.
Yes.
Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Thanks, Brad.
Are you actually at Washington University tonight?
No, actually where I'm at is at the Chavis Auditorium, the Chavis Arena.
Yeah.
Where they have a rabid crowd of about 4,500 Republicans and about 45 Democrats.
Yeah. 4,500 Republicans and 45.
And about 45 Democrats.
Okay.
Myself, your mother, and 43 others, probably.
Well, he comes right honestly.
And what did they think out there live?
Well, they think that she's the greatest thing since white bread. She just drove into the auditorium riding in the Straight Talk Express, along with all her props, her wife Todd, her infant child, pregnant daughter, carrying the child in hand.
So she actually came over with the truck, with the bus. They drove over to this other auditorium?
Into the Chavis Auditorium at St. Louis University. And I don't know if you could hear. Brought the phone, I'm out here away from the crowd so that I can see her on a TV and all. I could bring, if I walked inside, it would blow the phone off the line.
Well,
probably.
we could hear them. So the reaction, were they reacting during the debate, cheering, hooting, and hollering?
They were cheering and hooting. I could almost not hear half of what Biden said because they were still cheering whatever she had finished saying.
Yeah.
Basically reporting on my opinion of the thing, if you're interested in knowing.
No, I couldn't hear this.
Yeah, being here.
Yeah, what's your opinion?
Palin actually did a pretty good job, with the exception of the last 15 minutes, on the two questions regarding duties of the vice presidency and the imperial president.
Right.
Which she had no idea what the question was all about, so she went into one of her lumbering, ridiculous phraseologies.
Right.
And then Joe Biden, of course, explained what the question meant and gave the answer. And then the next question, where they said, what is your Achilles heel? And again, she had no idea what they were talking about, so she went into another one of her God Bless America speeches. Joe Biden went ahead and explained his Achilles here. He's a little outspoken, he said, but he should have said, and being outspoken, I'll yield the rest of my time. Could you please explain your previous two answers? Unfortunately, he didn't say that.
You're right. I'm going to recommend he hire you. Thanks for that checking in, Dad. I appreciate it. Let those 4,500 Republicans know that the one Republican we have here disagrees with them and doesn't think she did quite as well as they
think. As soon as I can get your aunt and uncle to leave the stadium, get into the car, I'll be able to hear the rest of the show and perhaps she'll hear what the Republican has to say.
All right, yeah, they're the ones who got you in there, my aunt and
They wouldn't leave until she got here. They had to hear her talk.
Okay. And they like her, huh? All right.
They hated her before tonight. I don't know if they like her now or not.
They do. After that attack, after that hit job she did on Biden and Obama over Israel, which I thought was obnoxious. Thanks for checking in, Dad. I appreciate it. Drive safe out there.
Bye-bye.
Watch out. Don't get hit by the Straight Talk Express.
Okay.
Bye. I was really kind of offended, I got to say, by that hit job she did on Israel when she came in and she said, well, I'm glad to hear that you and Barack Obama support Israel. Did you guys catch that?
Yeah, I think that's kind of her MO. If you saw some of the Alaska debates, that's kind of how she would stick the knife in to her opponents.
Well, I thought it was just, she said, I'm glad to hear that Biden loves Israel or something. I mean, these guys, especially Biden, for crying out loud, I mean, he's been a huge supporter of Israel. And I thought I heard a hiss afterwards, but they say, oh, that was just him breathing. I don't know. I thought it was pretty obnoxious. All right, we're going to get to more of your calls, Biden's closing statements, more angry bloggers, and much, much more here on the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman in for Malloy. Stick with us. Brad Friedman back in for Mike Malloy with our live bloggers roundtable discussing the vice presidential debate live here in Los Angeles. Marcy Wheeler joins us from Michigan of Empty Wheel. She's on the phone. Everyone else is here live, including David Day and Mark Danziger and Patrick Fry, who I said was our token right winger. But apparently you've got a message here on the Brad blog where they're doing some open blogging, open threading here in the blog. A fellow by the name of J.D. Do you know J.D. by any chance?
No, personally.
You don't know who he is? All right, J.D.
He's a commenter.
Yeah, a thoughtful person here. He writes, Paterico, you are brave. And Marcy, I hope you're listening because there's going to be some insults at you. So you'll be able to answer them in a second, okay? Paterico, you are brave and noble for wading hip deep into the bile spewed. I guess we are the bile spewed. Especially from that gal from Man Bear Pig. And I had to figure out what that meant. Marcy, I think they're talking about Fire Dog Lake. Does that sound right to you? Oh, Marcy?
Never heard it before, but I don't tend to wade in that particular bile spew either. So.
Maybe Pat can tell me. If you think that was bile spewed, as soon as I mentioned it over to Paterico, Patrick, he looked at his blog, and J.D. showed up over there. And what did J.D. say over there? Can you censor that, by the way?
Well, you said I can't say it on the radio.
No, but give us a... skip that word.
Go ahead. It says that, and then there's the word that I'm not supposed to say. Man, Bear, Pig, Wheeler and her cohorts are painful to listen to.
Yeah.
Paterico, how do you manage to not just scream liar at them?
How do you manage that, Paterico?
I'm a calm guy.
And have you heard any lies here tonight?
No, I think you guys are decent guys. They may be talking about the normal host of this program, who I have not listened to.
Well, he's a great guy, Mike Malloy. You should listen to him. You might learn something. That said, taking a shot at Marcy Wheeler, calling this bile spewed, and then using a word like that. Marcy, of course, it's beyond comment, but if you want to have one, I want to let you have a shot at it before I go to a call.
Maybe he just thinks that because I said that I thought Sarah Palin had done really well. Maybe he doesn't agree.
That's true. As a matter of fact, the only one who's not saying she did very well is Mark Danziger, a guy who goes by the name of Armed Liberal.
And
go
I'll
figure.
Find out that the polls agree with me.
And the polls, well, some of the polls. Yeah, we're seeing one from CBS. What was the one that you had, David Dayen?
CBS. And I think a little bit too much is put on these polls. But and it seems like the media just, you know, chases the soccer ball and goes to them. But CBS has it Biden 46, Palin 21. CNN poll says Biden 51, Palin 36.
And these are of undecided
uncommitted voters who watch a debate tonight.
They're giving it to... So only Fox News' guys giving it to Sarah Palin?
Well, Lunt. And here's the interesting thing about Lunt, which is very important.
Yeah,
you know
Frank
who
Lunt.
Sponsored that focus group?
Who was that?
Budweiser.
Well, then, let's just...
So doesn't Cindy McCain own, like, Frank? 50 Budweiser distributors?
Yes, she does, as a matter of fact, doesn't she? I'm sure that's just a coincidence, Marcy. Let's go to a call here. Mike in your home state of Michigan. Marcy, Mike... Oh, here we go. I forget I have to do this. Mike, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going okay. You say Palin was dodging questions?
Yeah, well, you know, it's the same old right-wing talking points. It's like watching George Bush in a debate or an interview. It's the same old thing. You know, I love how she said that she basically wanted to structure the debate in her own way and answer the questions she wanted to instead of answering them straightforward. You know, I think she did a better job than the Katie Couric interview. You know, she was a lot more articulate and on the ball, but that's because she has a bunch of, you know, talking points sitting in front of her. You know, I'm looking for some real responses to the question.
All right. Thanks for the call, Mike. Yeah, and the fact that she was really helped here, but the fact that they didn't have the structure they had in the presidential debate where the moderator could follow up, they could actually talk to each other. Instead, they had 90 seconds. 90 seconds was very flat. And Gwen Ifill, Mark Danziger, you said she did. Was it you who said
she
did well?
Yeah, I thought he was great. Although I'm going to disagree again, because I actually think that if there had been some give and take, she might have gotten off her kind of wooden recital of the points.
Well,
she
that's
was
it. She was just asking questions.
Well,
I'm not sure
about that because, I mean, when she was given a couple chances to respond, and she was evasive on a couple questions. I think that's pretty clear, is that, you know, they would ask a question about the economy, and she would go immediately to energy because that's where she felt safe. So.
And there was no follow-up whatsoever. I don't even think Gwen Ifill was allowed to do follow-up.
I don't know if she was allowed or not, but she certainly didn't.
Can I just chime in on that,
you
too?
Can.
I want to
Paterico?
Agree, yeah, I want to agree with the caller as well. And this is the thing that has disappointed me about Palin, is that I was a supporter of hers before McCain picked her, and I wanted McCain to pick her. And I think that she's a smart person, and I think that she was a good governor of Alaska. But I think that she has, whether it's McCain's handlers or her own decision, I don't know, but she's allowed herself to be taken in by this idea that you have to stick to the talking points. And I think that's what killed her on the Couric interview, and I think that it's why she wasn't as effective tonight as she could have been, because... It's really just sort of BS that you're talking points that you're hearing, as opposed to genuine sincerity, and that's what I'm missing from her, and I'd like to see it. I think she's capable of it.
Conservative founding father Richard Viguerie said he's got to unleash, they should unleash Palin, let her do whatever she wants. You agree?
Well, if what she wants is to be a little more sincere and get off the talking points, yes, but I'm not sure if she wants to do that.
I think that would be a dangerous game, but I'd love to see it. Brad Friedman sitting in for Malloy. We're going to have much more of your calls ahead, along with Marcy Wheeler up in Michigan, David Day and Mark Danziger, Patrick Fry here in the studio. Oh, boy, Sarah Palin. She didn't fall over. You got to give her credit. Stick with it. Don't make fun of that song, Dan. It's my theme song.
70s.
I play. Original. What do you say? 90s?
Yeah.
The 70s.
I don't have anything from the 90s, like newer than.
Oh, you want something? This is a special request. Dan, you're never coming back. Brad Friedman in for Malloy. Our live bloggers roundtable talking over the vice presidential debate. Oh, the, well, we hear the Republicans in St. Louis, in Missouri, on-the-ground report from my father, who David Dayan referred to as...
The next Edward R. Murrow?
That's right. Edward R. Murrow-esque. He'll be very happy. So in Missouri, he was with a bunch of Republicans. He said they love Sarah Palin over on Fox News. Marcy Wheeler points out that their focus group is sponsored by Budweiser. Marcy, good catch. And, of course, was it Mark who pointed out that, in fact, his McCain's wife owns a bunch of Budweiser distributorships. That's just a coincidence. On the other hand, the uncommitteds are saying in several different polls, David Dayan has brought up, that they are not, that they're choosing Biden. They say that Biden won the uncommitteds in the CBS poll and the, which one was it, AP poll? Remember?
I think it was CBS and CNN.
Okay, back on the blog at bradblog.com, Agent 99 is manning the open thread there, and she writes about our friend JD, who wrote in with charging the vile going on, and then he used some unbelievably vile words. She says, well, JD is referring to the fact that the facts spewed by Marcy Wheeler of Empty Wheel. It's like spewing holy water on a vampire.
Well, if we're going to continue the comment fight...
Now we've given JD
has
much,
a response
yeah.
As well. Yeah. And he
to
says,
himself?
To you.
No, okay.
He says, Brad, how about calling out Wheeler on her overt race baiting? How about calling them out for putting people in blackface?
Okay, well, it's Marcy.
Oh.
Do I have to call you out on...
2 years and,
old. No, because I'm kind of curious whether he's mentioning the fact that all McCain is doing... That what he's been doing specifically, or not McCain, the RNC, which is what he's got left in Michigan, is in Macomb County doing, you know, trying to tie Obama to Kwame Kilpatrick, who he has no ties with. That may be that. I had nothing to do with that post. It obviously wasn't intended in the way that it was taken, but I wasn't even part of Fire Dog Lake at that point, so you want to... Yeah, I mean, so... So attack me for that, but then I wasn't associated with the blog at the time. You can attack Obama because he's the same color as Kwame Kilpatrick or as Reigns, who used to run Fannie and Freddie, I think it was.
Hey, that's a legitimate point, though.
I'm sorry. About
no,
what? About Reigns?
About Reigns.
No, it wasn't. Hang on,
Marcy. I want to let you say the facts, but I just want to let people know what the hell we're talking about here. This was the attack ad that they put out tying Obama to Reigns, saying that he was an advisor and he's an African American who ran Fannie or Freddie or one of them.
And
they said he was tied to him. They said he was an advisor, and yeah, it wasn't legitimate. But I'll let Marcy tell you why, Marcy Wheeler.
Well, it's very simple. According to everybody involved, including the Washington Post, which is where McCain got it, Reigns has spoken to Obama once. Now compare that to Rick Davis, who until a month and a half ago was still on Fannie and Freddie's payroll. You want to make a case about who has ties to Fannie and Freddie, make it, but don't use race to tie Obama into a guy who used to run Freddie when McCain was still running with people on the dole of Fannie and Freddie up until a month and a half ago. I mean, that's absurd.
And go ahead, Patrick.
Okay. First of all, I can easily make a case that Obama is tied to Fannie and Freddie because of everybody in the Senate.
That's not the case. The question here was about Reins and the commercial.
I'm getting to that, but we're still talking about a guy.
I got to get to a break. Sorry.
Okay, he's the number two recipient of funds from Fannie and Freddie.
Okay.
And the Washington Post, in two separate articles, said that Reins was advising Obama on various matters. Now,
one article,
of course, they tried to pull back
one
on
article.
Two.
Patrick,
two.
One article, actually three, but one article because the second two referred back to the first one. And when they went back to that writer and they asked her about it, she said, well, they didn't talk about housing. He wasn't an advisor to Obama. Someone called him and asked his opinion about something else, about housing or mortgages or something like that. It was one person, one source, and to use it in something that was so overtly racist and frankly, for these guys who are keeping African Americans from voting all over the country to come out, and any Republican to say that there's race baiting going on the Democratic side, and I'm not an Obama supporter. I don't know who the hell I'm going to vote for. I know it ain't going to be John McCain after their behavior.
John McCain is racist when he puts a black man in a video, and he's racist when he puts a white woman in a video, because that's what the New York Times said when he put out a video of Britney Spears. But John McCain is supposedly racist when he does everything, but look, that's what you're giving us is the post story spin. Reins himself was the source for saying that he had advised Obama.
To Carly Fiorina before McCain released the ad and said, Carly, that's nuts. So Reins, before McCain released that ad, and let's go back, because you're not addressing the fact that you want to talk about close ties to Fannie and Freddie. McCain's campaign director was on their dole until a month and a half ago and lying about it. I don't see why we're having this discussion, because clearly Fannie and Freddie is running McCain's campaign, and Obama had one conversation once with a guy who happens to be black who used to run Freddie.
And never mind, I'll say
this is a feistier debate than that.
Let's see if we can get feistier still. Kurt in Minnesota says, Sarah did okay, but what, Kurt?
Yes.
Yes. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. Let's say that I thought Sarah McPalin did okay on the debate tonight. What really struck me was when they got down to the subject about the kitchen table, and when Senator Biden talked about he understood about how it was to be a single parent among the kitchen table. That struck a real strong chord in me. I'm from northern Minnesota, very similar to Alaska. And you know what I think? I think Sarah Palin comes from kind of that hardcore white, hardworking values type of environment like we have in northern Minnesota. And you know what? I don't question her motives. I just question her judgment like Senator Biden was talking about. She actually belongs at the same table that Joe and I belong at, and that Senator Barack Obama belong at.
At the same table, he said?
At the same table, where we've all come from.
I see.
Humble backgrounds.
Right. Same background.
Yeah.
And I think, in essence, her values probably are belong to us, too. She just happens to, and she's been co-opted or I don't know, how, or, you know, recruited in this be a vice presidential candidate.
Yeah.
And but in essence, when you look at Joe Biden's response, I said that man is. I mean, his response was so real.
I thought it was too. And Kurt,
struck such a chord.
I concur, and I got to move on. Thanks for the call, Kurt. It was actually quite moving. When he choked up, I don't know if you noticed that when he talked about. I understand what it's like to say you got to leave town to go get a job. I'll call you when I get some money, honey. I know what it's like to not know if your child was going to make it.
Yeah.
And he got choked up, and I thought that was quite moving.
I thought Biden had two really good moments, and they were both, you know, near the end of the debate. I also talked about the healthcare thing, but that was near the beginning.
One was that moment when he talked about, you know, his life experience, which, you know, I mean, a lot of people probably don't know the full story on that. And so he got that out in some ways.
And he didn't go into the full story. He didn't pull a McCain.
He didn't go through the whole thing.
He didn't say, well, I know because my wife
but it was
and my child was killed.
Yeah, right.
He didn't do a McCain thing where he says, oh, I know what it's like because I didn't have a kitchen table while I was in a prison camp and...
Good moment from Biden was, you know, for most of the debate, he wasn't, you know, debating Sarah Palin. He was debating John McCain and George Bush. And they weren't really, you know, there to respond to him. And Palin wasn't really doing that much of a job of doing that responding. When he talked about, let's talk about the maverick that John McCain is, when he laid out all of the votes that McCain has taken, the positions that McCain has taken, you know, in the past and in this election, and kind of blew up that talking point.
Yeah, he went through, he's not a maverick on this. He's not
right.
a maverick on that.
You know, I mean,
I think
that was a pretty strong...
Was it effective? Did it work?
Strong effect.
Well, I think he was effective in that he would repeat points like that, and another point where he did that was he would say, I haven't heard how they're different from George Bush on, you know, X, Y, and Z.
Right.
Now, that was an opportunity for Palin to say, here's how we're different. And she and John McCain do have a record that they can run on, and she did do this a little bit. She talked about taking on the oil companies in Alaska, which she did do. She didn't really talk as much about how she cut hundreds of millions of dollars from the budget in Alaska, which she did do, or the fact that John McCain has rejected earmarks for his entire career, which is something that other people don't do. And so those are things that show you a record that these are people going to go into Washington and change this culture that we have of borrowing and spending like mad. And that's a case she could have made based on their records. And she started to do it a little bit, but I think she could have done better because they have good records on that.
Marcy, did you start to say something out there?
Yeah, I just want to correct something.
Go for it.
Both years she's been governor of Alaska, her budget has come in significantly where she promised it would be. And she came in with no deficit at all when she was mayor of Wasilla and ended with a huge debt, even though we paid $25 million for them for apparently nothing because nobody in Wasilla knows what that money went to. So you and I have been subsidizing Sarah Palin for $25 million, another, you know, $200 million, blah, blah, blah. And she's still coming in over budget, over what she's promised to do, even though Alaska is benefiting from you and I paying so much at the pump. So I agree that John McCain has not done earmark. I mean, he did them back when he was representing the Navy. He has not done it when he's been in Alaska. But Sarah Palin can't make that argument, and I suspect that's one of the reasons she didn't try, because she's gotten hit so badly on her false claims about earmarks that she can't. I mean, she's lied about it.
And
so
John McCain just voted for a huge earmark bill in this bailout. I want to get to a call
before
I go to a break.
And then ask the president to veto it.
And, but I know Patrick, he had a response to me. 15 seconds.
Yeah, real quick, Marcy, you should go back and read the Anchorage paper and read the Democrats across Alaska screaming about how she was cutting $268 million from the budget during a time of surpluses.
Okay.
Right, and then look at what the budget did, which is actually not cut.
Oh, see, I didn't get to any calls because you guys just kept going on and on. Nice work. We got one more segment coming up. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Stick with us. Plenty ahead. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Our last segment here, we're going to try to fly through some of these phone callers and clear the banks. Brad Friedman in for Malloy with a whole bunch of bloggers in Los Angeles and Marcy Wheeler, who is not racist in the least, up in Michigan. Let's go to Robin real quick. Robin in Portland, Oregon. What's on your mind? Quickly.
Brad.
Yes.
First of all, Brad, thank you for everything that you do, especially in the way of voting.
Thank you, sir.
At one point on both of them, I thought Sarah did a lot better than I had expected her to, but there was a definite sign of a bug in her ear on that question that she got about 55 minutes into it. She started to answer one way and made a right turn, and I was sitting here going, what? And could she please learn to pronounce the word nuclear?
Nuclear. Thanks, Robin. I appreciate it.
Secondly, for Joe?
Yeah.
Joe
Biden.
That they need to understand, the war was won on May 1st of 2003, and no one has ever won an occupation.
Mission accomplished.
They need to get that out there.
Thanks, Robin. Let me jump over to Jason. I want to get everyone in. Jason, real quick, what do you think?
Well, I thought that, you know, it seems like the media is controlling all this. Like, everybody wants a Sarah Palin body and a Joe Biden mind.
I know I do.
That's kind of hot, Jason. Thanks, I appreciate that.
A little creepy.
You're giving me nightmares.
Let me get to Charlene. Here we go. Charlene in Gilbert, Arizona. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, Charlene.
Oh, my God, I'm ODing on the sticky, syrupy, sweet, folksy, cutesy stuff, and she said Talibani. And I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
I don't think that's a problem.
Thank you. What's that? Talibani
wasn't a problem, but she did seem to think that Scott McClellan was running the ground war in Afghanistan when it's David McKiernan.
No.
Yeah. That's what I thought she said. Who the hell is she talking about?
I don't know if that'll be blown up or not. But
That shouldn't be blown up. But you know what she did with sickly sweet was she was winking, which was really gross.
Really?
She winked a couple of times, and it's like, you know, McCain's already in trouble for blinking all the time, so you've got Blinky and Winky now.
Blinky and Winky, and it reminds me of the end of that Saturday Night Live sketch they did the other night when she said, isn't it true that when you're up against the wall that you become just more and more adorable?
Yeah, I mean, she looked at the camera, and she gave this kind of sultry wink, and it's like, what are you doing? You're, you know, that's not feminist. That's not pro-women. That's goofy. It's whatever.
That is
one. Sportscaster.
Yeah, go ahead.
By the way, can Katie Couric have Sarah Palin on every day?
Apparently. I think they're married at this point.
Can they stop doing the news on CBS and just have that as a traveling road show?
You wrote a note to Sarah Palin, stop talking to Katie Couric,
right,
as I recall.
Right.
Real quickly, Vince, in my old hometown of St. Louis, a very important swing state in Missouri. Vince, what's on your mind?
Hey, guys, I was not there tonight. I wish I was, but...
you should have been with those 4,500 Republicans over at the... wherever the hell they were in St. Louis. With my dad, I don't know. Anyway, he says they love her.
Well, some do. Hey, my only concern about Biden's performance was the constant sighing into the microphone. What was that all about, guys? Did you get that?
Oh, yeah, I heard that.
Yeah.
Why was he doing that? You would think he would learn that you don't... right into your lapel microphone.
thanks for the call, Vince, and I'm glad we're thinking about the important things as we did in 2000. Was that 2004?
Exactly.
It was 2000.
2004.
Al Gore
sighed
too much. I'm not going to vote for him. On the other hand, George W. Bush shows up, doesn't know a damn thing. Let's vote for him.
Winking is important, but sighing is not.
Sighing versus winking.
All right, we're going to run around the table here and do a John McLaughlin-like final question. And actually, before I do, Marcy, does it tick you off? People said Glenn Ifill was just fine. Doesn't it tick you off that the fact that they're not hitting the accountability stuff? None of it. The crimes, the unbelievable corruption with this administration, the destruction of the Constitution, the stuff that you report every day. Where the hell are these reporters on this? And you can answer that in about 8 seconds if you don't mind.
They're not going to answer it, but I think Joe Biden did a really good job both on CBS today and with his answer about Cheney saying, look, there are real issues. At the same time as Sarah Palin was saying, I'm going to expand the role of the vice president in the Senate. That's nuts.
All right, let's go around the round table here after tonight. We got another presidential debate coming up next Tuesday. But between now and Tuesday, based on this debate, after this, are the polls up, down, or no change for Obama or Palin? Let's start with David Dayen. He doesn't look as confused as Patrick Fry. David Dayen?
Not much of a change. The biggest thing that happened today was that McCain pulled out of Michigan.
Mark Danziger.
I'll call it a 2-point bump for McCain.
A bump for McCain. Patrick Fry.
Yeah, I don't see much of a change. I think that she needed to hit a home run, and she hit a double. She did fine, but she could have done better.
Marcy?
Not much change. I think she's going to stop hemorrhaging, but that's going to plateau where they are right now, and that's not going to help McCain in the long run.
Thanks to David Day and Marcy Wheeler, Mark Danziger, Patrick Fry, Desi Doyen here in the studio with Jason Jeffries, Ian Huff out there in Phoenix at Nova M. My thanks to Kathy and Mike Malloy for letting them sit in their chair. I'll be back here again tomorrow night. I think we've got Cynthia McKinney coming up.
Oh, my God.
And what? Oh, and Agent 99 at Brad Blog. Thanks, guys. We'll talk to you tomorrow night. See you on the blog until then.